Our fifth case for this morning is United States against Carl Miller, 113788. And Mr. Cafferty, whenever you're ready.
Thank you. May it please the court. My name is Pat Cafferty. I'm an attorney, and I represent Mr. Miller. The issue that's before the court, I'll recognize up front, was decided back in 07 in the Upton case that I've cited in my brief. But given the Supreme Court's decision in Begay, I believe that this court is obligated to review this matter in light of the standard that was laid down by Begay. And I think, in essence, what it comes down to is whether the predicate offense that the court relied on here in declaring Mr. Miller an armed career criminal meets the two-prong test, which is whether the short-barreled shotgun conviction presents a serious potential risk of physical injury similar in degree to the enumerated crimes of burglary, arson, extortion, or crimes involving the use of explosives, and involve the same or similar kind of purposeful, violent, and aggressive conduct as the enumerated crimes.
So I have two questions for you. One is whether you're actually arguing that any simple possession offense fails that test. And two, whether it's of any significance that short-barreled shotguns, at least as the guidelines view them, are very frequently used in dangerous and violent crime. And so if we had a guidelines case, not an ACCA case, we would be in a situation similar to the one we recently saw in the Raup decision.
My position is that what distinguishes this from the other crimes is this is passive, it's simple possession, versus the other crimes, which are active. The crime that is most similar to the one that's alleged here is the use of explosives, and my position is the use is what distinguishes it here. The use contemplates you blow something up. It is a violent event that causes very serious risk to human beings.
Do you need to show that there are legitimate uses that somebody might have for short-barreled shotguns, or is that irrelevant?
I believe that that is irrelevant. I don't think that's contemplated at all by the statute. And to the court's earlier question, the use of a short-barreled shotgun, you know, potentially is dangerous, but it's used in a violent offense. It's used in protecting somebody's dope in a drug case. It's used in an attempt homicide. It's used in the discharge of a firearm by a vehicle. Those in themselves would be violent offenses similar to what's enumerated in the statute, attempt homicide, things of that nature, where there is serious risk to another human being that's posed. Here, the simple possession of it can be hiding it in a closet. I actually had a case in Wisconsin where my client possessed a short-barreled shotgun that was 5/8 of an inch short of what was legal. To the naked eye, a regular gun versus this gun was indistinguishable. It was literally in his closet. They were investigating something else. They found it. This was totally passive. The fact that this was sitting on a shelf.
So no possession crime would fit the residual clause. Is that what you're saying?
I would be hard-pressed to come up with a
possession of explosives.
Correct. And unless the explosives were actually used, I do not believe that it would fit the definition that is laid out here. And again, I really think it comes down to active versus passive. And I've cited to Bradford, which is an Eastern District case, which I recognize is not precedent that you're obligated to follow, but I do think that it is well-reasoned, and I think that it very clearly lays out the distinction between the active versus passive crimes. And clearly here, Miller was convicted of the simple possession of this shotgun, and the possession is passive.
So the possession of any kind of weapon wouldn't count under your interpretation, no matter how
I believe that's correct. I'm aware that this court addressed a possession of a machine gun case. I don't think it was this panel. about 6 weeks ago or so. And I think that's a very similar situation. Anybody would look at a machine gun and say, wow, that's really a dangerous weapon. And that's true. But sitting on the shelf in a closet unloaded, it doesn't fit the definition that is laid out here in Begay. And therefore,
well, Begay has been modified by Sykes. No relation. Marcus and I are not related. And the Supreme Court significantly pulled back on that purposeful, violence, and aggressive language to the extent that the lower courts, us included, had been reading those as sort of a fixed formula for evaluating these cases, throwing this whole area into further confusion, which is why we're here. But, you know, it seems to me that if we're talking about first principles and what Congress was trying to get at here, somebody who possesses a short-barreled shotgun and somebody who possesses a machine gun is in the door.
And I think somebody who possesses a short-barreled shotgun and is actively using it in the commission of some crime or...
Well, then it's going to be charged differently. It's not going to be charged as a straight-up possession case. If the gun is actually used, it'll be charged as an attempt homicide. It'll be charged as a reckless injury if someone's injured. It'll be charged as a recklessly endangering safety or some sort of intentional crime having to do with the use of the weapon, if that can be proven. It's not going to be charged as a mere possession if the gun is actually used.
I agree. And under all of those circumstances that you've described, using the weapon, they'd be prosecuted and convicted an active crime.
Right. But my point is that somebody who carries around a short-barreled shotgun is a dangerous person that's of the type that the Armed Career Criminal Act is intending to get at. Because that weapon has no proper use.
And I think the language that you use there, carries it around, is what distinguishes what this man has been convicted of. He's been convicted of the simple possession of it. If the statute contemplated that he went armed with it, that he carried it out in public, that he pointed at someone else, that would be an active...
Yeah, point,
isn't there a branch of the statute, state statute, that says prohibits... Going armed with it or something.
He was not convicted under that portion of the statute. He was convicted under the simple possession of it.
Possession as in having it on his person or within reach?
Exercising dominion and control over it, yes.
Constructive possession?
I don't think that criminal mens rea contemplates constructive possession. I think that's a civil concept.
Okay.
With your permission, then I'd reserve the remainder of what I've read.
Fine.
Thank you.
Mr. Jacobs.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, I'm Matthew Jacobs, representing the plaintiff appellee, United States of America. And as Mr. Cafferty indicated, this Court previously has found that possession of a sawed-off shotgun is a violent felony for purpose of the Armed Career Criminal Act.
But under quite a different standard, even up through Sykes, the Supreme Court has been looking to things similar in degree, similar in kind. It hasn't. It's warned us against using, you know, certain phrases. But our sister circuits have found in a number of instances that possession of a sawed-off shotgun doesn't qualify. I'm thinking of McGill in the 11th Circuit, Serafin in the 10th Circuit. There are other, some of them are presidential. And so it's at the very least, it's a very serious question to think which things do have that similarity in quality, I'll just call it, to the things in the statute to satisfy the residual clause.
I think that's right, Your Honor. But I would say that Sykes clarified Begay to say, again, aggressive and violent aren't necessary, but intentional is, and I think we have that here. And
we understand that intentional is, but that's on a different vector. That's on is unintentional, reckless, negligent, and we've had a lot of cases on that. But within the group of intentional actions, intentionally possessing something in your closet is different from, you know, putting a pipe bomb under somebody's car and blowing it up.
Yes, I think there's clearly more obvious conduct that would qualify. Nonetheless,
well, and that's the use of explosives. That's why I chose that example.
But that, because the residual clause doesn't just say actual risk, it says potential risk, that then requiring use of the shotgun would turn a potential risk into a reality or an actual risk. So clearly it means to include more than actual risk. There's a potential risk. And in addition, and the court asked whether if the sawed-off shotgun was possessed for a legitimate purpose, but there is no legitimate purpose to possess a sawed-off shotgun. And that's what's significant about this. There's really been a legislative determination that this weapon is such that it cannot be legitimately possessed. So you take a firearm, you know, that someone might have a legitimate reason to possess, like a shotgun, or even a constitutional right to possess, but when you convert it to this type of weapon, it becomes illegal to possess it regardless of status. It's not as if you have to be a felon. So clearly there's a legislative...
You have to register it, but because then they'll nail you on the registration part. But yes, aside from Wikipedia indicating that people can use them for herding livestock...
Right. And actually under the Wisconsin statute, I don't think there'd be a registration exemption for that. You know, it's a blanket prohibition. I mean, there we are in Wisconsin where they're virtually encouraging you to possess firearms, and we're saying when it's this type of firearm, it's illegal for anyone to possess it. And so it's not a weapon that's possessed legitimately for defensive purposes. It's an offensive concealed weapon in which you sacrifice accuracy and marketability for surprise concealment and a broad shotgun effect.
What about somebody defending his house? He has his sawed-off shotgun, and he's worried that burglars are going to come, and he likes the fact that there's a wide spray when he pulls the trigger.
Well, it seems an irrational decision, though, in that, he, again, loses accuracy, can't resell it. If he's found with it, he'll be guilty of an offense, a law-abiding citizen. He would think it would discourage anyone like that from doing it. And then the court says, is it any type of possession? You know, is it passive? And I would say, while it's true that that's how the person is apprehended, they're possessing it, the act of possession really incorporates active conduct. It incorporates the manufacture, or at least the acquisition of the gun. You don't possess it unless you've gone out and done something to acquire it and retain it.
But that's so broad. I mean, what worries me about so many of these ACCA cases is here we have something that's supposed to be a sentencing enhancement. Nobody is applauding the behavior that we're looking at in all of these prior convictions. Indeed, they're prior convictions. Somebody's been convicted. They've served their sentence for whatever the crime was. Now we're asking, do they deserve a much more harsh sentence for this new crime, whatever it is, felon in possession of a firearm in this instance, because they're an armed career criminal. And so now you're going to say, well, even acquiring certain things puts you in this potential risk of physical injury to others or simple possession. And I don't know where the limit is, but I have the feeling the statute's gone wildly out of control.
Well, it may be that at the margin it's difficult, but when you consider what the individual found in possession of it, you know, the mental process that must have gone into acquiring and then possessing, retaining this gun, a gun that has a lot of detriments to it. It's not marketable. It's inaccurate. It has only a few strengths, and those are the strengths of it's concealable. I can surprise somebody with it. I can get a broad, violent spray. And it's a weapon meant to be used against individuals, not property, as some of those offenses which...
There are all sorts of things that are like that. People love their Uzis, too, and for some reason we seem to think that's fine. So there are a lot of weapons that I can't imagine any hunter using. I mean, I have family members who hunt all the time, and they don't go around with Uzis, or for that matter, sawed-off shotguns.
And does the question then say, are those the type of people that are more likely to pull the trigger? Because of their mental state, they're willing to go out, acquire this illegal weapon, and are those
the
types?
Steps. I mean, in a proximate cause sense, I think the question for us is whether it's too many steps away from the risk of physical harm to others to qualify.
Right. I think that is the decision the court has to make. Yeah. But obviously, this court relied upon the court's earlier decision in Upton, I think reasonably relied upon that as analyzed through Begay, but then clarified through Sykes. Is there any additional questions?
No, I don't think so. Thank you very much. Anything further, Mr. Cafferty?
No, thank you.
All right. Well, thank you very much. You were appointed, were you not?
Yes.
We appreciate your help very much. Thank you.
My pleasure.
And thanks to the government as well. We will take the case under advisement.